Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Science of Melanology presented by Dr. Jewel Pookrum. All recorded and printed materials are copyrighted by the Jewel Publications, Inc., a subsidiary of the House of Jewels. Any unauthorized duplication of these materials is strictly prohibited. Our commitment is to connect with those who want to discover and learn the science of life and the science of living. For additional books, MP3, Mayan calendars, Immortal Chat CDs, registration for the Balancing Program, and the Advanced Balancing Workshop, please visit our website, thejewelnetwork.com, or call 602-559-1842. That's thejewelnetwork.com. Or call 602-559-1842. Thank you.
Greetings. Greetings, everyone. This is Melanology with your host, Dr. Jewel Pookrum on the Jewel Network. And it's so fabulous to be back to you as usual. It just only seems like I could talk to you earlier today. Shows are coming so fast, et cetera. And one thing I've noticed is that I'm talking about the same thing in so many different arenas, so it looks like I just shared with you yesterday and early today. So, as I recall, we were speaking about light last week, and we have a lot more to say about that in relationship to melanin. I do want to share with you something that's really kind of humorous to me. I came across some very interesting information in my Immortal Chat Club, and that's what we talk about. We talk about all the factors that are necessary to activate our natural ability to be immortal physically. That's correct, physically. And that we can, with an understanding of how the avatar functions, how to be able to activate those dormant genes. We do have alleles for immortality, that we can be here for hundreds and hundreds of years and our bodies be flexible, our brain be healthy, our bones strong, etc., though we are in our 30s, and we literally, chronologically, can be 300, 400 years of age. We have that capacity, and in sharing all of the research that I have gleaned over the last 10 or 15 years on this subject, we have a chat club that we discuss all that about. And we are now in our 66th chat meeting on immortality. 66 chat meetings we've had and presented tons of scientific research, tons of documentation, incredible information on genetics, on light, quantum physics, because all of this information is necessary to understand and to activate the immortal genes. And we've been talking again about the proper nutrition for an individual who intends to live for hundreds and hundreds of years. And looking at the circumstance that we've created on the planet right now with the pollution of the water, pollution of the soil, pollution of the air, because we have not learned how to handle our waste, we talk about becoming green, literally, and we are now looking at seriously how to use the ambient energy, which means the energies around us, to be able to propel and activate those activities that need a perpetual source of energy. And so far, you don't hear many people discussing how can we use the ambient energy more effectively so that we do not have to cause so much disruption with creating so much biological waste, stool, urine, and not having to eat so much, but yet still stay vibrant and healthy. And that forces us to actually look at, can we literally stimulate and increase the capacity that we have to photosynthesize, to photophosphorylate enzymes and minerals, et cetera, in our body through the use of ambient energies. And very interesting enough, in our Immortal Chat Club, we are studying intensely the process of photosynthesis, because one of the things that we recognize is very interesting is that chlorophyll, that pigment that allows all of the trees to be green, animals that have green skins, etc., that is a form of melanin. Melanin is one of the highest evolved biological pigments known to humanity, and next to that is the chlorophyll. So are there properties and capabilities in melanin that would allow us to literally photosynthesize and to use light more efficiently so that we can literally diminish, to decrease the amount of dependency on food and liquid? And so I've been talking about this process all week long, et cetera, and it's just been amazing because then we received this fabulous article that I found just incredible relative to the response that we received on the blogs from sending this article around to all of our listeners, all of our students in our chat clubs, et cetera. And I don't know if any of you out there have serendipitously come across this article, but it talks about in India, there's a gentleman who has come forth and has shared with the medical profession there that he is over 70 years old and he hasn't eaten nor has he drank anything for 70 years. And so one of the physicians said, you know, you have to come forth. Let us isolate you. Let us observe you. And let us witness this incredible capability ourselves. And so there was a news release that was made after this gentleman had been contained and in isolation in a secure space in the hospital complex for over 100 hours. And it was confirmed that in that particular period of time, this gentleman consumed nothing that they could identify orally, nothing intravenously, that this gentleman never urinated or created a bowel movement during that period of time. And so obviously the medical profession is really sitting up and paying attention to this. And this article went out into the world, and some of the responses were, they were just LOL. I was just so intrigued. And I just want to bring that to your attention, that it's so wonderful to see where each individual is in their brain development and in their understanding of the potentials that lie within their avatar, their physical body. It was interesting. Some individuals were like, yeah, that is great. Bring it on. You know, I would love to be able to know more about this. Tell me more about how my body works, how this is possible. Others were like, please, we need to shut that hospital down. We can't even imagine that they would even entertain anything that was so ridiculous. And that obviously, you know, this is one of the huge, most, you know, enormous jokes that have been played on the medical profession. Then we had those individuals in between. I thought one comment was just so cute. One response was, I've been able to go without any food or drink for over 17 years. And what I do is every night I leave my body and I go to the Pizza Hut across the street and I come back. And if you heard what I said, I just thought that was incredible that, you know, this was a very sarcastic means of, again, admitting that in their minds this seemed to be a preposterous. But, again, it was very profound that the individual was willing to comment on the possibility that I and my body are not the same and that I, as a consciousness, have the ability to leave it and to project my consciousness elsewhere, have an experience there, and return back to the body and relate that experience neurologically to the body where the body accepts what I tell it. Now, I don't know if this individual literally understood the quantum physics and the quantum mechanics of the very real possibility of that really being the case. Because we do know for a fact, and neuroscience has definitely proven this, that the body believes what you tell it. We've got a fabulous example that's going around out there. Tony Robbins exhibited this to hundreds of thousands of people that, you know, when you can really get the attention of what you want and overlay that on the brain, where the brain is creating profuse neurochemistry in response to to your thoughts, to the image that you're holding in your consciousness, then that is flooded through the bloodstream, through all the cells of the body, and the body believes it. It totally changes its response to an experience based on the new reality that you're holding, even though it may have responded totally differently for decades. And he used this paradigm and this whole process of being able to captivate the brain and unify the neurons where they are secreting simultaneously neuropeptides that drench the body with chemical communication to inform the body of what it is to act upon at that moment in time. And he used the paradigm of firewalking, where there are many people, you know, executives of large banks and just all kind of business people that you would definitely never think would even be involved in such, quote, hoax, but yet and still had the experience with proper instruction and how to be able to focus and overlay on the brain a clear command accompanied by a picture in mind that the brain totally reprogrammed the tissues of the body and the body responded in a different way never experienced before. And all of these people, bank executives and administrative secretaries and even we understand senators, et cetera, were able to recognize that fire only burned them because they gave the body permission to believe that it would. And when they basically told the body to respond differently, it did. And they were able to basically walk fire and not have any trauma. So the sarcasm of this lady's response to the gentleman who hadn't eaten in 70 years by saying that every night she leaves her body and she goes across the street to Pizza Hut and comes back is not so sarcastic after all when we understand the phenomena that occurs in the quantum physical realm of quantum mechanics with the relationship between the mind and the body. And that if this person really is projecting that they had, you know, two triple-size pizza supremes with extra, what would that be, pepperoni on top, and that they literally did eat that in consciousness and literally were full and in their own mind belched after they basically psychologically ate that, and then did return to the body and impart that experience to the body would then respond as being full and would not have any urge at all physically to want to be fed, to have a craving for hunger. So it's just really, really interesting that how knowledge about how the avatar works, how the mind instructs the brain, and how the brain then translates this into a chemical reality is very, very important now before we decide to judge and criticize experiences and decide whether they are real or not. Not until we really understand the dynamics of cellular biology, neurocellular biology, and the mind-body relationship can we say that this phenomena is impossible. So this gentleman has alleged that he has the capability of energizing and propelling his body on a form of energy that it does not require him to consume food or water, nor the intake of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats to produce ADP, adenine diphosphate, to energize the energy circuitry of his body, of his cells. So the plants definitely have the capacity to do this. And it's very interesting what we've been learning here. So we now are in the process of looking at light more intensely because we have to begin to understand this incredible form of energy and how it really impacts our life. You are listening to The Melanology Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jewel, and you are being hosted by the Jewel Network, Justifiably Enchanted with Enlightened Living, and welcome. We are finishing up part two on light, and so let's look at this. We talked about light in some detail last session, our last show. We talked about the use of the eye and what happens in the brain, et cetera. So let's just summarize that a little bit and then move forward. So, in general, what we discovered and discussed last week is that light enters the eye not only to serve as vision, but to go directly to the body's biological clock within the area of the brain known as the hypothalamus. We discussed last week that the hypothalamus controls the nervous system and the endocrine system, whose combined effect regulates all biological functions in humans. Now, in addition to this, we shared last week that the hypothalamus controls most of the body's regulatory function by monitoring light-related information and sending it to the pineal gland. There, the light is then used as a source also of information to cue other organs about light conditions in the ambient environment. Now, the study of color in the Western world has been undertaken for hundreds of years. And it's very interesting in my research to note that the Soviet Union, as well as India, very interesting, has been studying light refraction and spectral photometric measurements in quite detail and has recorded this for hundreds of years. We also are aware of the fact that there are many, many, many papers and research articles regarding color, the visible light spectrum, which is a very small area in the total electromagnetic spectrum, and the effects that just the visual light spectrum has on the human body. So what we are clearly aware of now is that light has become so important in our health. Okay, we have created a disorder. As a matter of fact, a whole segment of disorders that are directly light-related. And we know for a fact that there is also a form of malnutrition known as malillumination. We've also been aware of the fact that with our food now becoming so contaminated, being grown in artificial forms of light, and in the presence of the pollution of the air, that the food also has been devitalized significantly, which means that it does not emit to us through the form of digestion the amount of energy necessary for us to continue to activate and sustain a healthy level of metabolic function in our body. So, light is very, very, very interesting, and there has been tremendous studies to let us know how intensely through the brain and through this fabulous polymer known as melanin, we interact with this field of energy in all ways in our life. Now, light is extremely important, period. Now, I'm just going to make this statement, and you'll be hearing me say it over and over again intermittently, that all forms of matter literally are nothing but the coalescence of light particles. So I don't care how solid it appears, I don't care how etheric it appears or gaseous, it is still a form of light. And that substance at its subatomic level, whatever it is, the desk, the chair, the water, the flower, the plant, the animal, is composed of photons. Photons that literally have collapsed upon, they have become dense enough where they are causing light to fold in on itself that appears to us to be solid because we don't see any particular spectrum reflected back to us. And in its geometric shape, it now becomes an object or matter in our awareness. So, light to all humans, because all humans have a amount of melanin necessary for their existence, whether it appears to be minimal or whether it appears to be extreme in our navy blue-black sisters and brothers, light is very important to the health of melanin-dependent individuals. And that's a very interesting term that I'm using because I'm saying to you that we have found that without melanin, period, in the body, if the melanin was removed from the significant areas of the brain, if it was removed from the nucleus of all the cells, if melanin was removed from actually enshrouding the genetic information on its carrier known as the chromosomes, the organism could not exist. So even though we may have forms of life that appear to have white fur, white feathers, in the humanoid species here, we have individuals who appear to be quite pale in skin color that we have described as having a disorder known as vitiligo or albinism. They still have melanin in their tissues, enough melanin where they're able to sustain themselves to live, but they may not have enough melanin, as we are discovering, that allows them to thrive, that allows them to have prolonged permanency in their health and in the physical functioning of their body. So we have to now begin to recognize that all humanoids are melanin dependent. And what we are seeing now is the degree of how much melanin or how little melanin one can have, but yet and still be able to be viable, to live. And this is very important. So again, light is extremely important to all melanin-dependent individuals. And we are all melanin-dependent if we are walking around and alive. And those individuals with vitiligo and with albinism recognize that they're at the extreme end of literally having to deal with on an everyday basis what it's like to have the minimal amount of melanin to exist. That's their problem. That's why they're in such discomfort. So therefore, inappropriate light exposure or exposure to artificial sources of light have been identified as being very dangerous to humans. Malillumination is a critical factor in the health of melanin-dependent individuals, especially melanin-dominant individuals who live in urban areas where cement buildings, artificial light, interfere with the absorption of full-spectrum light and all exposed melanin-dominant individuals to abnormal sources of light. Now, in considering the role light plays in influencing our health, it's important to first look at the constituents of sunlight as well as the kinds of artificial light to which we are exposed in our daily lives. Light, and let's go through this summary again, is composed of waves of radiant energy. It is measured in wavelengths, and the wavelength really is the distance between two consecutive rests. Visual light ranges from 400 to 70 nanometers in wavelength. The gamma ray, the X-ray, the ultraviolet rays have wavelengths that are shorter than 400 nanometers. We have infrared light, microwave, radio wave, which have wavelengths that are longer than 700 nanometers. So what I have just described to you is literally the small range that most people think of light as, which is known as the visible light spectrum. Only a frequency of photon movement measured in the length of 400 to 700 nanometers. Anything that is longer than 700 nanometers, most people cannot see and may be aware of. We can hear it. Long wave radio waves. We're familiar now with microwave. Okay. We also are familiar now with infrared when we talk about laser. The gamma rays and the X-rays and the ultraviolet rays, most individuals cannot see either, and those rays are the ones that most people talk about and have learned through miseducation to be frightened of. Now, I throw that in, the description of being miseducated about these much faster-moving photons in our electromagnetic spectrum, known as gamma rays, X-rays, and ultraviolet rays, because, again, most of humanity does not recognize that they have been hardwired. Every cell in their body has literally been wired to be able to receive and conduct and transmit short wave lengths of light. We have hard wiring for gamma rays, for X-ray, and ultraviolet ray. We have actual protein filaments, just like an electrical wire, that literally have been laid down in the cell membrane and within the cytoplasm of every cell in our body, and it literally has a circuit breaker. I want to look at it as a circuit breaker, literally. Okay, it has a conduit and a circuit breaker in every cell known as the microtubule. The microtubule or carbule system actually is where all of the circuitry, the proteinaceous circuitry, is contained in literally a cable, a coaxial cable type structure, where each filament of protein forming that cable system or carbule has been fine-tuned and created to be able to transmit these very longer or shorter wavelengths of light. So if that's the case, then if we're exposed to gamma ray or X-ray or ultraviolet rays, why does it appear as though we can be damaged from them? Scarring, burnt tissue, really the formation of abnormal function of the tissues afterwards. And it is because most people have not been taught how to literally click on the main circuit breaker in the carbule so that the capacity to transmit and receive these frequencies of light and to modulate them relative to the needs of the cell so that the cell does not burn up or overheat has not been activated in most human bodies. And it cannot be activated unless, at this level of our evolution, we first become aware of the fact that we have this circuit breaker capability and that we allow that to be turned on. We must accept that we have this capability. It's already there. We have micrographs of it, electron micrographs of the carbule system or microtubule system, depending on the author that you read. We have confirmed that this microtubule system does look like a cable that has moved into a circuit breaker division, and it's dormant in most individuals. It is not able to absorb ultraviolet radiation and then modulate the amount going through the cell and then dissipate the excess as heat. It's not able to do that, even though everything is present for that to happen. You are listening to The Melanology Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jewel Pookrum, and you are listening to The Jewel Network. If you're just tuning in, well, we have still some time left on our show, and we've been talking about the photonic capabilities of melanin, and literally in common language, we're talking about the light capabilities, the light transmission and receptivity of the melanin polymer and how that is directly related to our moment-to-moment capability to be healthy. We are recognizing that all individuals, all beings of the human race are melanin-dependent, whether they are suffering from the disease albinism because they have very, very little melanin, or whether they have an abundance of melanin and they are navy blue black, all variants of the human race are melanin dependent. And because they are melanin dependent, that is that we cannot live without at least a certain amount of melanin. That then also means that we are dependent on having to receive a certain amount of light on a regular basis because we have this pigment that is light dependent, and many of the hormones, immune function, tissue regulatory mechanisms, metabolic mechanisms, etc., are dependent upon the amount of melanin and the precursors that melanin makes, hormones that derive from melanin to regulate all of these functions and systems in the body are light-driven. We've talked about earlier that it's highly suspected and that the melanin polymer functions as a super-duper form of chlorophyll. And we have talked about the fact that in other arenas, we are investigating seriously the biochemical activity of chlorophyll and correlating the same functions or either more profound chemical reactions, enzymatic reactions, also occurring in the melanin molecule. So this melanin molecule that has been an attention getter in the awareness of humanity for centuries is just beginning to be understood as a very vital a very multifunctional biological tool that can allow us as humans to actualize incredible capabilities. So our capacity to, again, diminish our gross intake of food, because in consciousness and with conscious nurturing, which then potentiates the functioning of melanin within our tissues, that we can use light more efficiently. Matter for food can begin to diminish. So earlier in the show, we've been talking about, is it possible that humanity itself can literally become more green in its own biological functioning? And, you know, we've been talking about the use of solar-driven homes, solar panel-driven homes, and wind-driven homes, et cetera, geothermal-driven homes. And we've been looking at all of the ambient energy sources that are available to us, as opposed to relying on hard, coarse energy resources such as coal and oil. But have we literally looked at the capacity for ourselves to become more green and to utilize more efficiently the ambient energy sources? And in this present discussion, we're looking at how can we use light? How can we use more intensely the visible ranges of light, the visible light spectrum? How can we even use the short wavelengths of light or longer wavelengths of light more efficiently? And that brings us to having to look at the ultrastructure of the cellular anatomy that we have available to us that perhaps can allow us to become more efficient in using pure light as a direct form of fuel for the human body. And the clear understanding of melanin makes that possible, because we can see from many of the biochemical, biophysiological reactions that melanin either activates or plays a major role in, or sustains, can be also driven intensely by the amount of light the melanin molecule is exposed to. So we are, again, looking at and understanding the basic anatomy and ultrastructure of light, the electromagnetic spectrum, and we recognize that we literally have microstructure capability to handle long wave and short wave light frequencies that are beyond the visible light spectrum that we all accept that we can use and interact with in comfort. We can interact with gamma rays and X-rays or infrared and microwave forms of light if our electrical circuitry in our cells was fully activated. And we are making the analogy that the circuit breaker that we have in our homes that definitely determine the capacity of the house to be able to modulate with the frequency of electricity that's coming into the circuits is analogous to the microtubule system, the cable carbial system in the cells of the body, that we do have literally a form of a cytoskeleton of protein filaments that literally are wired and laid down like a cable that have been selectively primed to each be able to conduct and interact with a specific wavelength of light. So we have a wire in the carbial system that can handle X-ray, ultraviolet rays, microwaves, radio waves, infrared waves. But again, if the circuit breaker box is not turned on, then therefore the whole microtubule circuitry is not activated, and so therefore being exposed to these different wavelengths of light appear to just cause damage and destruction to our tissues. So this is a new and exciting innate quality that melanin has always offered us that has yet to be activated in the awareness of the human being, even though the physical anatomical structures have been sitting there looking at us. We have photographs of them, light microscopy, electron microscopy, and yet and still we have not ventured to understand how can we activate this. So so that it will allow us to be able to interact with the full electromagnetic spectrum more efficiently. So let's look a little bit more at how light has really affected us and why now and in our near future we are going to have to become much more savvy, much more conscious about the application that light can be used in biological systems, our system, to offer us more literally clean fuel, clean energy that does not require so much consumption of food and water, but yet still allow us to function completely efficiently, where we can begin even to diminish the aging effect in our body. So, of course, that famous scientist in our past, Thomas Edison, and his associates were, along with other individuals, the inventor of the incandescent light bulb. Now, some people, you know, might want to look at that because we've had some other individuals that we found were also associated with this invention, but on the books right now, Thomas Edison is still listed solitarily, but there were others, which was obviously a quantum leap in technology and in general, and especially in light technology. So it simultaneously created a situation in which people lost respect for nature's daily light-dark cycle and began to do what? Burn their candles, burn the incandescent lights in their house at both ends. So normally before that time, individuals, when it got dark, would probably, you know, remain aware and active up to 3 to 4 hours in darkness, and then there was a retirement to bed. But now with that incandescent light bulb, and now we've gone to halogen bulbs and just a lot of other things, it appears to be almost continuous 18, 20 hours, 22 hours of light going into the brain at all times. So whether it's natural light, and most people are not exposing themselves any longer to natural light because our capacity to have light, and especially artificial light, has allowed us to be able to stay indoors in too often in quarters, spaces that are not well ventilated. And so, therefore, the quality of light with all of its wavelengths is no longer available, because we found out that the incandescent light bulb literally is composed of and captures and transmits only certain wavelengths of the full visual spectrum of light. So, therefore, with this advent of the incandescent light bulb, we have begun to literally shift and alter our daytime, nighttime cycles in the brain based on hormonal activity and also based on literally the amount of actual full spectrum light that the tissues of the brain are exposed to. So now with individuals staying primarily indoors, there's been a drastic reduction in the hormones that would normally be produced and emitted from the brain into the body to help the body regulate its hormonal activity and those reactions and metabolic processes that are definitely dependent on certain hormones, which are dependent on light exposure. So one of the drastic changes that has happened in humanity, it really showed up in the late 60s throughout the 70s and 80s. But before I speak on that, let me just remind you that you are listening to The Melanology Show. I'm Dr. Jewel, and this show is being hosted to you on the incredible Jewel Network, Justifiably Enchanted with Enlightened Living, broadcasting always the science of life and living. Now, what was obvious that began to happen in the late 60s and throughout the 70s was that the fertility rate of humans in the Western world begin to plummet significantly, to the extent that the birth rate, depending upon the amount of melanin in our different cultures, was almost near only 2 to 5%. Therefore, it became very clear to medical science that we were going to have to get busy and figure out how to correct this. Well, even still to this day, the innate natural method to correct this drastic onset of infertility and impotence has really only been sustained through pharmaceutical drugs and peri-surgical procedures, peri-surgical and outright surgical procedures. But the confrontation and the announcement to our society that our lack of exposure to full spectrum light on a regular basis was the origin and the source for much of the infertility that is being experienced. It was not announced that the reliance on the incandescent light bulb as a light source and containing ourselves in spaces that only were lit by this artificial source drastically altered the hormonal function of the pituitary gland and the hypothalamus and the pineal gland, where the proper ratio of hormones, the capacities body to utilize the nutrients that it was fed, in summary, caused the body to become impotent and incapable of creating viable sperm and eggs to reproduce itself. So this is very important for us to begin to understand that even though our technological advances have been marvelous, they still have not been able to mimic close enough the natural sources of light or foodstuffs that are able to sustain healthy functioning of our glandular system. That has not happened. So now we've gotten to the point where, you know, we are suffering emotional disorders, seasonal affective disorders, because we are finding now that prolonged exposure to artificial light, the brain just is not able to handle that any longer, and it definitely goes into a suboptimal state of functioning. The result of that is just really a morbid perception of life that seems to only, quote, brighten up, unquote, lighten up, quote, unquote, when the individual is exposed to full spectrum light. So people have gotten much better because they have exposed themselves to full spectrum lights. We've created full spectrum incandescent light bulbs. But have they really totally healed from this disease known as malillumination? And the answer is no, because, again, this impotence, this infertility is still very much a problem for many of our melanin-dominant cultures that literally need to really have much, much more light exposure. So we are creating lots of problems here because we have created a culture where we are staying indoors, we are relying on artificial sources of light, we have now screened in and screened out viable light from our environment, our ambient environment, with all of the different types of tints and alterations in glass window pane production that is causing tremendous amounts of problems. So we have some interesting research that was done by some very astute observers. They don't like to call themselves scientists, but they literally acted like such and were able to reveal incredible information to us. John Ott, for example, is known as one of the forefront researchers in light and its effect on human tissue. And in his research, he found it astounding that he could actually control the fertility of animals as well as control the sex of the animals that were bred, and also he was able to control the coloring in their fur. So, interesting enough, he was a banker. He was into finance, but he loved his camera, and he got so good at photographing, and he started becoming curious about growth processes. So he began looking at how he could set up his cameras for slow photography, or time-lapse, as it's known, photography, where he could actually see the different levels of development and growth of plants, and was able to start selling that type of photographic technique to the movie industry. So he became one of the favorite outsources for time-lapse photographic film of animals and plants for Disney. And as he began to recognize the importance of how he had to set up the environment to time-lapse photograph the development of a pumpkin, for example, for the Cinderella film, or the growth and the blossoming of a rose, etc., that he became totally enamored and consumed in understanding the effects of the electromagnetic spectrum on biological systems. So he began to recognize that inadvertently, animals that literally were reared or raised for their pelts, such as chinchillas and minks, that a lot of these breeders were having problems with sometimes having, you know, no, just a zero rate of reproduction. They're not able to have, you know, produce any offspring. They also recognized that they were either having all males or no females, and they couldn't figure it out. And he, in his research, began to recognize that, you know, if he left the lights on too long or there wasn't enough light, that the animals changed their eating habits. Also, their fur began to change. And then finally, he also noticed that their offspring also would either be of the same sex or they would be none at all. So the breeders start calling him and asking him, well, maybe can he consult with them to help them understand what they could do to their pens so that they could get better production. And it was amazing how he finally began to understand and was able to manipulate the light source in the breeding pens, where he could determine the numbers of offspring that the chinchillas, he worked with chinchillas and minks, were going to produce, and their gender. So from his work, he actually began to also do some very light research with human beings. And one of the most profound studies that he did was in Chicago in the public school system. Now, this has a lot of different connotations associated with it. And this is, again, some of the things that we're going to have to work with and work out in regards to using human specimens for research. But he suspected that the use of artificial lighting, fluorescent lighting especially, could be quite harmful to health. And he recognized that the frequency of light that fluorescent lighting emitted could definitely cause problems. So they did a little study in a couple of the public schools and the public schools in the inner city. And they noticed that for some reason there always seemed to be a higher rate of misbehavior and misconduct in these inner city schools with the male students as opposed to the female students. And that was just really interesting. And so he filmed the classroom activity of the students. And it would be noted that in the classroom, the females would be sitting quite attentive, paying attention to the teacher. And there were always one or two, or three males, usually in the back of the room, that were not paying attention, either not able to sit up in their seat, they seemed to always be slouching, or, you know, very fidgety, et cetera, or they were very much interacting with each other in a very irritating way. So it was interesting. Some of the films that he took, they were actually kind of punching each other and just kind of wrestling in the back of the room. And, of course, you can imagine that the teacher would eventually be annoyed with that. They're not sitting in their seat. They're on the floor rolling around, even though they're in the back. And then they would be asked to leave the classroom, and that would happen two or three times. And then finally the parent would be called. And then, obviously, if the parent couldn't correct it, then, you know, they were asked to leave the class permanently. Well, in all of these classrooms, they noticed that there was fluorescent lighting. And he noticed that the fluorescent lighting varied from soft white to soft pink, and then there was a blue frequency that was also being emitted. And when they removed the fluorescent lighting and used only incandescent light bulbs, and they continued to film the class, the students in the class, in 2 weeks' time, all of the male children were sitting in their seats and were paying attention to the teacher as all of the females had been doing throughout the entire classroom sessions. So it was amazing to see the total difference in the posture of these, and they happen to all be melanin dominant, these melanin-dominant, eumelanated children, males and females, being attentive in the classroom under incandescent lighting, as opposed to demonstrating that there was a few students that could never sit still, that were quite fidgety, almost as though they were irritated when the light source was fluorescent. Especially the soft pink seemed to be the most highly irritating. And that was very, very interesting. So what they discovered when they analyzed the fluorescent lights is that they all give off radiation, and that most of them definitely did not accompany the fixtures with radiation shields. It wasn't shielded. So it's noted, and it's always recommended, that when you are using light fixtures that provide fluorescent lights, there should be actually a radiation shield. And it was postulated that these melanin-dominant children, male children especially, were hypersensitive to this radiation that was given off. And it, for whatever reason, caused the electromagnetic impulses to misfire and cause this kind of neurologic irritation where these children who were sensitive could not actually control their nervous system. They became hyperactive because of this, for them, malillumination. So this reality and realization has still not been accepted and actually aligned in many of the workplaces, in definitely many of the schools. Serious, serious problem. So before I go to the question to our phones and also to our chat room, let me just give you some information so that you can write down and just take with you, because this is very interesting in relationship to the health of melanin. Full spectrum light, including X-rays, cosmic waves, radio waves, TV waves, radiant heat, long ultraviolet rays are important for the health of melanin-dependent individuals. So we need the full spectrum. Even though many people are frightened of X-rays and ultraviolet, et cetera, you need that. But you've got to learn how to turn on and increase the functioning of your microtubule carbial system. That's not happening. And we're going to help you to learn how to do that. So it is recommended that a thorough study of light and its phenomena and effects upon human tissue be undertaken by all melanin-dependent individuals, and that it has to literally become part of the educational system in all of our schools for us as melanin-dependent individuals to know how to handle and support the health of our avatar. Now, windows, sliding doors, skylights, all of these different apparatus that do transmit light, we need to really identify what type of light, what are the wavelengths that they do emit. Now, there are at least two commercial brands of ultraviolet transmitting plastic. One of them is what is known as UVT acrylite. This is manufactured by an interesting company, American Cyanamide, okay? The other is what is known as a UVT plexiglass, okay? And this is manufactured by the Rahm and the Haas company. Now, both of these companies make ultraviolet-absorbing plastic that do not emit potentially harmful amounts of UV radiation. So it's important to be sure to get the type of plastic coating that goes over your glass that will allow you to have access to some UV, but not full exposure until you can hype up the functioning of your microtubule system. So it's also noted that you want to be aware of the thickness or the thinness of the glass that you're using. See, most of us don't even really understand what types of glass we should have put into our windows and in our doors, et cetera. There are certain chemicals that also you can use to wash your windows with, just wash the windows with, that will also help to diminish excessive amounts of ultraviolet light coming through the windows, et cetera, so that what does come through your melanin can handle. Same goes for eyeglasses. We're finding that a lot of people are getting these different types of tints on their glasses, and they have no idea that they are really interfering with the daytime, nighttime neural chemistry that's necessary for proper brain, immune, and tissue function and metabolism. It's very, very important. So with this information, because there's something interesting that actually goes on with the emission of the types of frequencies of light from the TVs, et cetera, we're going to move forward into talking more about the structure of melanin, and we're going to talk specifically about the components of melanin that are directly related or are specific vitamins that are necessary for health. Most people don't think of the fact that melanin literally is composed of vitamins. Yes, it is. Part of its polymeric structure is vitamins. Certain vitamins are part of the melanin polymer that are necessary. And when you are deficient in certain vitamins, that automatically means that your melanin is not functioning. It's unable to really understand what were the imbalances that were really going on in the body so that we could treat them early and they would not have to rely on pharmaceutical drugs or have to have significant surgery. But it required me to have to spend more time understanding how the body talks to itself, how the body then shows or demonstrates to the owner the imbalances so that the owner can then get a tune-up, literally, as we talk about, without having to have the whole avatar inactivated, deactivated, and then investigated. And that's what happens when you have to have surgery. That's literally a shutdown. The avatar is literally shut down. They tell you that. We're giving you an anesthetic. We're going to knock you out. You're not even going to be able to breathe for yourself or anything. You've been totally shut down. It's like taking a car and they say, okay, we've got to totally dismantle this car, take out the engine literally and whatever else so, you know, you won't be able to pick it up for a while. It's the same thing. But if you had went in and taken care of it when the little red light on the dashboard said, you know, check engine mechanism, you know, it would just been, oh, we just need to refresh in this, take this out, clean this out, and boom, you're gone. The car would have never had to be shut down. Well, it's the same thing with the body. But you've got to be able to pay attention to the early signs of dysfunction, and that the early signs are not tumor formation. See, that's what people don't understand. They think that, oh, if I feel a tumor or a mass, that's an early sign. It is not. We can tell you definitely that, you know, a tumor that's palpable usually has been growing somewhere between 5 to 10 years. You've ignored this until, boom, now it's that. But you'd have symptoms way before then. But we have not been taught how to read the body. So this is what I'm saying, that, you know, the Jewel Network is dedicated to broadcasting the science of life and living. And, you know, these are just some of the broadcasts that we'd like to bring you at a later date. But staying in alignment with definitely understanding melanology, melanin, and understanding how important this pigment is for all of humanity is extremely important, because it is biological living light. It is a solar cell. It is a direct source of perpetual energy for your body if it is kept healthy and activated in consciousness. And so I suspect that my show time is gone, and oh, it is. And I just want to say thank you so much for listening, and we will pick up again next week in Melanology. This is Dr. Jewel. This is the fabulous Jewel Network. Bye-bye.
This is the Science of Melanology, presented by Dr. Jewel Pookrum. All recorded and printed materials are copyrighted by the Jewel Publications, Inc., a subsidiary of the House of Jewels. Any unauthorized duplication of these materials is strictly prohibited. Our commitment is to connect with those who want to discover and learn the science of life and the science of living. For additional books, MP3, Mayan calendars, Immortal Chat CDs, registration for the Balancing Program, and the Advanced Balancing Workshop, please visit our website, thejewelnetwork.com, or call 602-559-1842. That's thejewelnetwork.com. Or call 602-559-1842. Thank you.